Thank you, Carrie. I really appreciated the historical perspective that John brought in at the beginning, and I think that he talked about how long it takes sometimes to get to where you're going, and with agronomic phosphorus management, we're in the early stages of more environmental phosphorus management. And this is really something that I think is a pretty early stage. It's nothing complicated, but it's nothing that we really have going, and I'm just presenting it as something that I see potential to use in this whole process of managing phosphorus. I would like to start off reflecting real briefly on the work that Larry did on phosphorus. He did a lot of work with runoff, artificial runoff simulators to see what would happen under different circumstances. And one key thing that he found that I thought was really interesting was the effect of the diet that the animals eat on phosphorus runoff in manured situations. And he found that if you give them a diet that reduces their phosphorus in the manure, that it reduces runoff more than the reduction of content in the manure. In other words, if you put on more of that low phosphorus manure so that there's equal amounts on the two plots, you still get less from the one where the animals were fed the better diet. He also did a lot showing the importance of residue, and I think that comes back a little bit to what Deanna was saying about it was just infiltration. It was just reducing the total amount of water going off. It's that transport factor. And Larry was one of the voices of reason as we were in the early stages of soil tests must never go above X kind of hysteria that did sweep across some of the government-type people. If you're one of them, I'm sorry. So he was very instrumental in talking about source and transport were both very important, and people were getting big into the idea that we had to have these fancy tests, and he did a bunch of the tests, and he found that really they didn't necessarily perform any better than simple tests, like water-soluble, which makes a lot of sense since it's, rainwater is very pure, and that's what's actually carrying this stuff. And standard soil tests were also pretty good. On a personal level, Larry also did a lot for me. I was in a lot of meetings with him because we were both in the North Central region, and so we'd go to the North Central Fertility Conference. I was on the nitrogen committee with him. I was on the hypoxia committee with him when there was one. And watching the way he worked really was formative for me because I was a new professor going to these meetings, and he was very thoughtful and thorough all the time. And John Lloyd, one of his comments he made to me about Larry one time was, not much gets past Larry. He just thought through things carefully and thoroughly, and he also was insistent wouldn't be the right word, but he always wanted to see the evidence. He didn't want to just hear what you had to say. He wanted to see, how did you get there? And so that's kind of the spirit that I'm going to use in talking to you about P management decisions, and in particular here I'm talking about the kind of management decision where you're purchasing an input. You're deciding to make an investment and apply it on your field. And I'm going to go with the best case scenario. You've got a soil test. We all know that there's a whole lot of scenarios that aren't the best case scenario, and someone's doing it more by the seat of their pants or just doing what someone told them to do. And the soil test, we know there's science behind it, there's evidence behind it, but let's think just for a second about where that evidence comes from. If you're lucky, it comes from a network of recent experiments in your state or region. Now, if you're in that category, you probably live in Iowa. Santonio Mellarino has been an absolute fiend out there doing all kinds of phosphorus response experiments for the last 20 years, and they have an excellent response database, and many of the rest of us don't. And I'm sure that there are some states that are pretty good in second place that I'm not as aware of as I should be, but we have a bit of a weakness even there. But even if you've got that good network of recent experiments, you have a lot of sources of uncertainty as you make a decision about that are related to the nature of the evidence that you're using. You're using evidence from soils that are not the same as yours. And we all know that the mineralogy, the texture, all kinds of things affect what's going to happen with phosphorus when you apply it to that soil and what is happening with phosphorus already in that soil. Another thing that, you know, we all kind of know that what the roots are accessing below that 6-inch zone is important, but it's just too hard logistically to sample that on a routine basis, and so we don't, and yet that has a huge impact on are you going to actually get a yield response to that fertilizer or not. Third factor is that there's an awful lot of judgment that goes into deciding how do I translate research results into a decision tree or a decision process, and I'm going to suggest that this simple application of doing on-farm trials, which is simple in a way and not that simple in a way, but I think doable on a large scale, eliminates all these sources of uncertainty by getting the evidence from the field in question, the field that's being managed. Because the soil there is not different than the soil you're managing, it is the soil you're managing. And the subsoil there, whatever effect that has, is taken into account in the response experiments you do there. And there's also no interpretation really to be done, or almost none. There's no judgment call to be made. You either got a yield response and made money or you didn't. So here's an example. The two outlined areas did not receive any phosphorus. And you combine those, and the rest of the field did. And you combine those with a yield map. And what we've done is cut those strips up into little squares. And you take the yield with phosphorus, subtract the yield without phosphorus, that's your yield response, and you can map that. So you create a map of your yield response to phosphorus. And in this particular field, what we found was that the response was, in general, low. The dark blue is all less than 15 bushel yield response, and in fact, it's pretty much evenly distributed around zero, as you'd expect when the mean is zero, and then there's that one hot area of spatially clustered yield response. We'll come back to that. But let's talk just about the low response to start with. They made an average of 3.5 bushels per acre of corn, this is a corn field, in response to applying that phosphorus. At current prices, that'd be about $10 an acre. The year we did it, it was probably 20. They spent $38 per acre on P and $5 on the application cost. So they lost $33 an acre. Now, how many successful businesses spend $43 to make 10? Now, it's not really your formula for success in most cases. And so I think there is an opportunity there to look at, can we do this a little bit differently? So we've had 19 test fields in Missouri today. 18 were corn and one was soybean. Average yield response is one bushel per acre. Average economic return was a loss of $50 per acre. Now, that was because a few of these people were putting on large applications that cost a lot, but still, not unusual to be spending that much on phosphorus. We did have two of the fields out of the 19 that had profitable response. And so I think there's a lot of potential for producers to reduce spending on P without reducing yield. How are you going to decide where that potential is or how you can exploit that? I'm saying that these kind of strip trials with just leaving one or two or three strips unapplied in a field is the first place you'd want to start, because you're looking at low risk but generating information that is valuable management information. Now, some of you might, in fact, I'm looking at somebody who might, consider that not finding a yield response to phosphorus could be a double-edged sword. What's the danger if you go out and you do a few strip trials, you leave strips unfertilized, and you find that you didn't have any response to phosphorus? You may not realize that those savings have to end. When phosphorus prices went crazy in 2008 or whenever it was, I was getting all these calls. I want to buy a piece of steel, and I want to put my phosphorus in the ground, inject it, and I want to cut my rates in half. And they had penciled out that they could pay for the piece of steel with the money they were saving on their fertilizer. But what they didn't realize was that if they're cutting their rates in half and they're taking off more than they're putting on, at some they're depleting the system, and at some point they're going to get to the point where it's costing them a lot of yield, and they better have paid for that piece of steel by the time that day comes. You've got a mass balance thing that is going to whack you over the head if you don't watch out. And so the strip trials also give you the way to prevent getting whacked on the head by that big yield loss when that day comes, because you can monitor it. And John Laurie is the one who coined the term sentinel strips. I'd already had the idea in mind, but I like that terminology and I'm adopting it. And so this is a field from last year. The producer put on 3 strips of phosphorus. Now, the year before, he had had some P emission strips and had no yield loss, and he was emboldened, and he decided, I'm going to leave the whole field basically unfertilized except those 3 strips. So it's probably between 10 and 15% of the field got phosphorus fertilizer. Now, I would kind of probably try to space them out if it was my field, but those are really his sentinel strips. I might have put them where the 2 red strips are so that I'm going to catch the different soils in that field more successfully and the different pest management, because some of these fields are combined from 2 or 3 fields in the past, and that might affect how things come out. But you've got some sentinel strips where you're going back, giving them P regularly, maybe every year, maybe every other year, depending on what your management program normally is, and they continue to get phosphorus that same location until those are the strips that are making more money. They're making more money than the neighboring areas. Not the whole rest of the field, just the neighboring areas, so you're really comparing apples to apples, and you've got similar water holding ability and everything else. Compare the adjacent strips, and then once the strips with phosphorus are making more money, go back to putting removal on the whole field. And if it was me, I'd probably double or triple up my first time once I got to the point where I could no longer get away with not applying phosphorus. I'd double or triple up so that I wasn't standing on the edge of a cliff ready to fall off, and give myself some management flexibility, because I'd rather, you know, if the weather or the pea prices or my cash flow meant I was going to have a hard time getting pea on that year, I'd rather have the option to not do it, and having not being right on the edge of the cliff would allow me to do that. Now, a key question is, how long is it going to be before pea is profitable? And if it's going to be 2 years, this is really pointless. If it's going to be 5 years, you might be getting into a reasonable reason to do it, both economically and environmentally. And if it's going to be 12 years, you probably are going to come up quite a ways ahead. Well, this field, I'll tell you the story of it. It was a father-son operation, and I don't know how long it had been, but the father didn't really believe in buying phosphorus, hadn't done so for, I'd say, probably 20 years is a good guess. And the son was coming in and was convinced that this was a real problem in their operation. And so he said, we're going to do grid soil sampling and we're going to get some phosphorus on this field. And the colored strips you see are the same kind of response map that I showed you earlier. They left 2 strips unfertilized in the field. You see a lot of dark blue, meaning not getting a response. So what do you think the soil test was in this field? After a long history of not applying P, except maybe some natures now and then. It was an average of 6. And we got a 7.5 bushel yield response. So they spent $130 per acre on fertilizer, and even at $6 corn, that was about $50 return. And for the soil test, P to 29, 4 to 29, average yield response was -2 bushels per acre. It's where they really made money on phosphorus in this field was when they got down into the areas that were 1 to 3 part per million. That flies in the face of what our evidence from a lot of other places is about what's going to happen with yield at those kind of soil test levels. But that's what happened in this field. And, you know, I think almost for sure this is a field with quite a bit of subsoil phosphorus, and that's how it was able to make, you know, full yield without having phosphorus fertilizer applied, even though the subsoil phosphorus is very depleted. So soil test is not the only thing that's controlling yield response to P. There's a lot of other factors involved. And remember this field? This is the other end of that same spectrum. Here's soil test, grid sampled at a lot of points in that field where we had just at the points where we had yield response data, you can see to start off with there's almost no relationship between soil test phosphorus and how much response we got. And the other thing is there's that area in the middle of the field. Remember the bright colors? Well, those are the areas that are with a 30-plus bushel response. And the soil test there ranges from 35 to 51. And in general, you'd be pretty much expecting that from 35 to 51 soil test, you're not going to hardly ever see a yield response, and yet we're getting 30 to 90 bushels in that particular spot. And so there are other factors controlling whether you get a yield response other than just what you're finding in your 6-inch soil test. Now, these are two pretty extreme examples, but out of my 19 fields, those two were in there, and they were two of the earliest ones. Soil map unit does play a part. We had 8 fields where the phosphorus response strips crossed multiple soil map units, and by that I mean ones that were different enough and there was a large enough area to be a decent test. 5 of those 8, there was a profitable yield response in 1 or 2 of the map units. Not for the field as a whole, but in 1 or 2 map units. So something different was happening in those map units, or at least potentially it was. You'd want to see it happen multiple times before you really had any confidence in it, because that's, we're scientists and that's what we do. We did find that in general, coarser texture, lower landscape position, and being prone to flooding were factors that appeared to possibly be consistent, but I wouldn't put a lot of weight on those at this point. More testing and experience would be needed. But this is just an example of one of those fields. The yellow outline shows a soil map unit of mulled and loamy fine sand, and that pretty much defines where that high response area was. Even though soil test was high, in that map unit we were getting high yield response to phosphorus, and in the others, which were heavier textured, a silt loam and a silty clay loam, we were not getting the yield response. So I'm going to finish up just with, it's really pretty easy to do this. This particular field here, if you look, you'll see that there are 3 places where there is no sign showing where the applicator went. That's because he just used his light bar, skipped over a pass, and he can be perfectly parallel on that swath at the right distance away with his spinner spreader, and it just skipped over a pass, and it's really easy to do. On this one, it was done by programming 0 strips into a rate control file. That's also, if you know how to do it, easy to do. I can't do it personally, but I work with several people who can. And this one was created by a guy who was doing his phosphorus application injected with strip till, and he just turned off those meters on 4 of the passes through the field. So there's a number of ways to get this done that are really not that hard. We just got news last week that we've been funded to expand this approach over 3 states. And if you're an observant person, you'll notice that the last 2 speakers are on this slide. We'll be doing this work in Missouri, North Carolina, and Ohio. And if you're observant, you'll also notice that it takes 3 men to do the amount of work that 1 woman can do. So thank you very much. And for the people on this slide, I'd like to see you soon because we're going to talk this stuff over. Thanks a lot.